Hello, thank you for listening to an Inside College Hockey podcast, a special World Junior Championships edition of the Inch podcast, recorded Wednesday, December 3rd, 2008. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, joined tonight by Inch editor Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Mike.
Good evening.
Well, let's get right to it. The big announcements today, both from USA Hockey and Hockey Canada. First of all, the United States announces its roster for the 2009 World Under-20 Championships, most commonly referred to as the World Junior Championships, and it features a roster of 13 college players out of the 22-man roster. And Canada announced its list of 38 players for its December scouting and training camp. That'll obviously be cut to 22 before the tournament begins, and four collegians on that list. We'll start with the United States roster, and some good news for a lot of the programs out there, a lot of the nation's elite programs that will be very well represented this year. We'll start with the University of Minnesota, which has three members listed on the United States team. Those are Cade Fairchild, Mike Hofel, and Jordan Schrader. Michigan has two in Matt Rust and Aaron Paluschai. Boston University has two, Colin Wilson, Kevin Shattenkirk. Notre Dame has two defensemen, both Ian Cole and Ted Ruth. And New Hampshire has two, with James Van Riemsdyk and Blake Kessel. The other two college reps on the United States roster are Jimmy Hayes of Boston College and Ryan McDonough of Wisconsin. And we should also mention Danny Christo, who is in the United States Hockey League with the Omaha Lancers right now and is a North Dakota recruit for next season. Your initial reaction, Mike, when you saw the team announced earlier this afternoon?
Well, I think the first thing that crops up is how the balance, which I think has been a little bit, or it seems to be, you know, in recent history, maybe a little bit more college-weighted, is more 50-50 now between between college kids or kids heading in the college direction and the major juniors. The second thing that really popped out at me, and I know that there really isn't a tie to the college game, is the goaltending situation with Thomas McCollum, who plays for Guelph in the Ontario Hockey League. Odds are he'll be the go-to guy, and he'll be backed up by Josh Eunice, who plays for Kitchener, also in the Ontario Hockey League, and was at one time a Bowling Green commit, and actually the right before what would have been his freshman school year, jumped to the OHL, and kind of left Bowling Green high and dry. But I think, you know, goaltending, as always, is a crucial part, piece of the puzzle. And you know, I think McCollum's numbers are very good for a decent, not great, Guelph team. Eunice has struggled, but Kitchener is not a great team at all. In fact, they're downright bad. You know, the other thing that really jumps out as you look at these guys is as you look at the roster, at least, is the size. I mean, you just go up and down the roster, and you know, just about everybody is bigger than 6 feet, and that's forwards and defensemen. Most everybody is, you know, you're looking at guys, a lot of 200-plus guys, and I'd say most guys are, you know, 185 or bigger. So a lot of size on defense and up front for the U.S. team. And the third thing, I think, that really jumps out is, you know, you can look at the roster, and the roster that was announced today. I actually went back and looked at the list of players who were invited to the evaluation camp in August in Lake Placid, and just kind of compared, you know, who got left off, or you know, who went to that camp, who didn't make the team. And as you look at the list of names, you really can't find any glaring omissions. I mean, there's maybe one or two guys you think, well, you know, maybe he could have slipped in. But overall, you can't really argue with any of these selections. I know that in the past there, you know, that hasn't necessarily been the case. But you know, really, it seems like this team came together with the right personnel, and they've got the best roster that they could have put together in place.
Yeah, I agree with that, and we should certainly credit USA Hockey, its organizational depth, and the team that really was in charge of assembling this. This wasn't a situation where they got together in August in Lake Placid and made their cuts then. I mean, that was the start of an evaluation process, actually probably not even the start, but the continuation of an evaluation process, getting to know some of the personalities, getting to see some chemistry, how they interact with one another. But then again, I mean, USA Hockey, the team and the management group that was assembled to put this whole thing together, if you look at where they're from and how they're spread around the country, around the continent, rather, they're in different areas. So they can get to see kids throughout the fall. You know, a lot of the people were divided up and went out to watch games and recorded games and took a look at how players were playing right now for their club teams or for their college teams. And that continuous evaluation till this point here in early December is really what helped make the final cuts on these guys. So from that standpoint, USA Hockey should be applauded. I'd like to follow up on another point you made, which was regarding the size of these United States kids. And I think that element is even more important when the tournament is here in North America. I guess we kind of buried the lead on this. Tournament runs December 26th, the day after Christmas, through the medal games on Monday, January 5th. But when you're playing on the smaller North American sheet, you know, getting some forechecking pressure and being able to bang down in the corners and in front of the net certainly has a better opportunity to score goals. And that's when you really like to see the guys like James Van Riemsdyk and Colin Wilson and Jimmy Hayes and, you know, Eric Tangrady, a 6'3", 214-pounder who plays for Belleville Bulls, the OHL, he's a Philadelphia native. You know, being able to get down around the net and get some dirty goals really might be the strength of this USA team.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's obviously a great point and one we kind of, you know, you don't think about off the top of your head because you just kind of think international hockey, okay, you know, we're so used to seeing this event overseas that, you know, we just kind of expect that big sheet of ice, but you know, with this roster, I mean, it really does work into you can see that the vision that the group in charge at USA Hockey had in mind when putting this roster together. I mean, they're big, they're strong. I think that, you know, just looking at the college kids on the roster, you got some guys on there that you know, are willing to dish it out and, you know, can play with a certain amount of grit. And, you know, I'm looking like an Ian Cole and, you know, Teddy Ruth. They're, you know, from Notre Dame, two guys that are, you know, have the ability to be strong defensive defensemen. And I think you can say the same for some of those forwards, too. You know, guys that are willing to go in the corners and mix it up and, you know, people that aren't going to back down. And, you know, the more I look at it, just from a hockey standpoint, I like the makeup of this roster. I still have my questions about the goaltending, and you know, I that's one of those things that you really, I don't think you know until you get there.
Well, yeah.
But
well,
I think overall, you know, the makeup of this roster, there's a nice mix of guys here. There's a nice mix of guys, and you know, I think that the highest compliment you can pay to this team is that, you know, you look up and down from the roster at the evaluation camp, and you don't have an argument for somebody who should be in there.
Yeah, you're right, and that obviously their job was to get the best team, or what they felt was the best team, and that's something that's gone there. Another point that was made, you know, in tracking some of the reaction to this roster throughout the day in different media outlets was that the expectations for this team and this tournament have changed so drastically, and it's something we've talked about as close followers of this tournament at Inside College Hockey over the last 6 and now 7 years, is that, you know, before it was kind of a surprise. It was a, well, let's see what we can do here. But then you get, you know, you won the title, I guess, what was that, probably 04? that they
yeah
that
what
they
year
won.
Was that? That sounds about right. Montoya
yeah,
the year
in that yeah Montoya, Drew Stafford,
Parisi.
Loaded, unbelievable
yeah.
team, but that group really. Really raised the stakes of this tournament, and now it is becoming a major event on the American hockey calendar, which is certainly a testament to that. And of course, the United States will host in Buffalo a few years down the road. Another difference in looking at the schedule, again, kind of burying the lead here. The tournament's in Ottawa. I don't think we mentioned that. I'm sure most of our listeners already know that. But it'll be in Ottawa at the Senators' home rink, Scotiabank Place. And the United States will play four round-robin games. Their group is Germany, the Czech Republic, Kazakhstan, and Canada. The top three out of each group advance to the medal round, the knockout round, so to speak. So that's the tournament setup. The United States will play 12:26 at 3:30 p.m., and then all the rest of their games in the round robin are 7:30 starts. Another thing we've grown accustomed to watching when this tournament's held in the Czech Republic or held, you know, in Sweden or Finland or Norway, is that, you know, you get those morning starts here on the East Coast and on the West Coast because they're evening games over in Europe. But these will be game times that the United States kids and the North American kids will be accustomed to playing to. Canadians certainly support the support the tournament like no other nation, and most of these games will be sold out, even the games not involving Canada. And, you know, Ottawa's not that far from the northern New York border, so people can certainly get up there during the holiday season to see some of these games.
I admittedly don't know a lot about the other rosters other than Canada. I mean, you know Canada's going to be loaded year in and year out.
They've won four in a row.
They've won four in a row, and they're obviously the favorite this year.
They always will be.
They always will be, and obviously playing in Ottawa, you know, anything less than gold medal is going to be a disappointment for them.
Oh, it's not a disappointment. It's a complete failure.
Yeah, it's that.
I mean, and that's how it's viewed, and they
yep.
understand
and
that, which to me is something that the Canadian team year out doesn't get enough credit for. I mean, they can't lose this thing. They
no,
can't.
No,
it's
they can't.
Not like, oh, here's a silver medal already for us. Not happening.
Exactly. One thing I think, you know, just kind of thinking of looking at the schedule, and I think, you know, I would expect the United States team to advance to the medal round, and qualify for the quarterfinals. You talk about expectations. You know, I think looking at this team and just kind of, you know, you look back at when they won the gold medal a few years back, and you know how the expectations in the U.S. have been raised in terms of this tournament. You know, I think anything less than a semifinal appearance is a disappointment. Granted, you'd like to come back with a medal, but you know, in my mind, I think that this is where USA Hockey is at this point. That anything less than, you know, being among the final four is a disappointment. Is failing to fulfill what they set out to do, the mandate. I think that's a good word. You know, I like the fact that Canada and the U.S. are in the same pool.
Well, there's two ways to
just for the reason that.
You wouldn't face them in a crossover game.
Well, you wouldn't face them in a crossover game, but also the U.S., you know, should they meet in the medal round, we'll get a sense of what it's going to be like
right.
to play in Canada in front of the, you know, all these people. And it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be rabid. It's going to be loud. It's going to be one-sided. I mean, it's going to be nothing like these kids, anything they've seen or will probably see in their lives. It's going to be an amazing atmosphere, and it's going to be an incredibly difficult atmosphere, especially at 7:30 p.m. on New Year's Eve. I mean, that just
you think
that just raises the stakes. So you know, I think it'll be nice to
it'll be a good game for them.
It'll be a good game for them. in a lot of ways, win or lose.
Yeah. What you said about making the Final Four, there's two ways to do it. You can win your group, then you're slotted automatically into the semis. The winner of each group goes to the semi. Or if you finish second and third, you cross over in that quarterfinal game. So the third-place team from one group would play the second-place team from the other group, and those two quarterfinal winners would go into the semis against the two group winners who would already be there. So now if you just, by method of elimination, look at the teams that are in that other group, your crossover game, if the United States were to finish second or third in their group, would probably be against one of these four teams: Sweden, Finland, Russia, Slovakia. You know, so that there's some good hockey on the other side, too. I mean, just because the Czechs and the Canadians and the Americans are all in one group, that doesn't mean that they got the hard draw.
No, not at all.
So those games to me actually are some of the best, are those quarterfinal crossover games in this tournament. Those are games I love to watch.
And I assume Latvia is the other team in that.
Probably. I don't know. I'd
guessing
not say without looking it up.
Guessing because
be
the U.S. plays them in an exhibition on the 21st.
Ah, good point.
So I'm just. But I mean, yeah, you're right. And you never, you know, some of those. I mean, you figure Russia's going to be there. There's no question about that. That's a tough group. Also, I think that's probably tougher than the U.S. group.
Could be.
Top to bottom.
I'm not sure about Slovakia. Well, yeah, Germany and Kazakhstan, you got to think, are probably weaker than Slovakia, Latvia, I don't know, Poland, Italy. You know, those teams have all been in this tournament in the past. Norway, I suppose, could be there. Or Swiss?
Yeah, I think the Swiss were there not that long ago.
Yeah, so anyway, that's what's going on schedule-wise and what the group stages are all about. Let's briefly mention the four college players invited to the Team Canada tryout camp. They are Riley Nash of Cornell, Patrick Weirkosh of Denver, and two Wisconsin Badgers, Brendan Smith and Cody Golubev. So those guys, and funny if you think that Weirkosh was actually committed to Wisconsin at one point, that the red and white of the Wisconsin Badgers and Cornell would dovetail nicely with the Team Canada sweater. But those four players will have a chance to compete for a spot on Canada. The likelihood of them making it, probably not very high. Riley Nash, perhaps because of his draft status, might be the player most considered for Team Canada. Do you agree with that, Buzz?
Yeah, I think I would, and just that.
And just based on how few college players have played on that Canadian team, I mean, the ones who have been like the man. You know,
it's been Turris.
Kyle Turris. It's been Mike Camilleri, Danny Heatley, Jonathan Toews, of course. You know, so it's a big task, and again, you can't argue. I mean, when you look at, I mean, there are eight guys in the National Hockey League tonight that are eligible to play for Canada this year in the World Junior, including Drew Doughty and Steve Stamkos,
that's just ridiculous.
And Brendan Sutter.
Well, and like we talked about just before we started recording, going back to last year's rosters. I mean, the top D pair for the Canadians last year was Carl Alzner and Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
Well, they're both in the NHL this year. I mean, that's.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that just and Sutter was on the fourth line.
Yeah.
You know, one guy that kind of breaks the mold though from the U.S. or has in the past or from the college ranks as far as Team Canada was Dan Bertram.
Yeah.
From BC,
point.
Who was around. He
played 2 years.
He played at least 2 years. He might have played three, and I'm not sure.
2 years, yeah.
But, you know, just valued for just a good two-way forward. And, did a lot.
Didn't get a ton of ice time, but contributed. Got his gold medals, that's for sure.
That's right.
So that's that.
That is that. And one other guy we should mention is Jim O'Brien, former Gopher,
Yeah.
Who's on the team, now plays for the Seattle Thunderbirds in the Western Hockey League.
Yes.
So a college tie there, too.
Yep. Jim O'Brien on the United States team, Seattle Thunderbirds. One more point on the U.S. from me is that there are 7 returning players for the United States team who have played either last year, well, all of them played on last year's team. One of those is James Van Riemsdyk. This is his 3rd such tournament. And of the 7 returners, 6 of those are college guys. So you have to imagine that the leadership and mentality and attitude and tenor that the veterans on this team are going to set will be molded by what they've learned and experienced in college hockey. Defensemen Ian Cole and Kate Fairchild, and forwards Matt Rust, Jordan Schrader, James Van Riemsdyk, and Colin Wilson. And Van Riemsdyk and Wilson played on the same line last year, and that was the United States' best line in the tournament up front. So.
And that brings up a whole
yeah, you want to start playing with these
ball of wax. I don't want to put anybody together yet.
Yeah.
But I will be interested to see where Schrader ends up.
Who knows? There's so much talent. You got to find what works, the combinations. And it's a short tournament. You know, you got to figure things out quickly. If it's not working, you got to get it fixed in a hurry. Because you can't lose twice and then make up ground. You know, by then it might be too late, depending on what's going on around you.
And the other thing we should also remind people is that everybody dresses.
Yeah, there's no scratches. There's 22 guys on the roster. You can dress both goalies and 20 skaters.
So, in the U.S.'s case, that means they'll have they have 8 defense. Yeah, they have 8.
70 forwards.
70
and yep.
And 13 forwards. So basically one extra.
Yep. So that's good. We've looked at the USA Hockey side of this. We are, after all, a college hockey site. And let's go back to the college hockey side of this. Now, something we looked at is that during the duration of this tournament, from late December through the first week of January, college hockey still plays games. A lot of holiday tournaments going on, and some of the teams that will be missing key players, their college schedule doesn't stop for that. So it starts with, you look at the University of Michigan, they've got the Great Lakes Invitational with Michigan State, Michigan Tech, and North Dakota is the 4th team there this year. Wisconsin might be the team most affected. Even though for certain they're only missing Ryan McDonough, but the 2 guys could go to Canada. And they've got 4 games actually during this stretch. They host their tournament with Alabama, Huntsville, Harvard, and Lake Superior State, and then on the first weekend of January they host Northern Michigan for 2 games. So that's something to keep an eye on for Badger fans. Now, BU and Denver are at the BU's at the Denver Cup, so BU would be without Colin Wilson and Kevin Shattenkirk for that. New Hampshire just has 1 game. That's against Maine. So those 2 guys, Van Riemsdyk and Kessel, would be out. Minnesota has its Holiday Classic, which includes Northeastern this year. First place team in Hockey East, so something to keep an eye on there. And Notre Dame has a tournament as well in Chicago. So we'll see that. Traditionally, teams really haven't relied on that as an excuse. I mean, there were a couple years when Michigan lost like 6.
Yeah.
And they had a legitimate gripe during the CLI.
Well, and that was when Camilleri was going to Canada.
Brendan Morris.
So they had a couple guys. They had, splitting guys between 2 teams.
Yeah,
but one thing that I've noticed in the past couple of years is that some of the teams that have had the heavy losses, and I think Minnesota is the most notable, have really done a good job of adjusting their schedule so they only have to play a couple games and and don't lose guys. Like some of those years, I know when Michigan would come back and not only lose them for the GLI, but they'd maybe miss that first CCHA series in January, which is, in the grand scheme of things, it's way more important than the Great Lakes Invitational. So coaches have done a pretty good job of, you know, of juggling the schedules, and you know, those teams that see a lot of guys going on a year-in, year-out basis have been able to really minimize the impact. BC has done a heck of a job this year. They play two exhibitions
exactly.
over Christmas in New Brunswick.
Yeah, well, and it's only Jimmy Hayes really for them too.
Right.
But yeah, it's good. Something we'll talk about during and after the tournament. Certainly not for tonight's quick little podcast here. But one of the things we'll talk about is how players respond. You know, traditionally there's been two ways that they go. You know, they either use the tournament to explode into a great second half, or they're kind of worn down from it and don't play their best hockey when they return to campuses in January and February. So
yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on, as it always is. But one interesting change or one dynamic to keep in mind this year is that, you know, they're going to Ottawa, which is not like going to Moscow
yeah.
or,
yeah.
you know, Stockholm or wherever it is.
Right.
So I think that, you know, guys will be, for the most part, on, you know, they'll have jet
yeah.
lag for maybe a day and not.
The ones on the East Coast won't have it at all.
Exactly.
You know, so.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that'll do it for an Inside College Hockey special World Junior Championships edition of the Inch Podcast. He's Mike Eidelbus. I'm Joe Gladyszewski. We'll have plenty of coverage leading up to and throughout the World Junior Championships. And, of course, complete college hockey coverage all season long.